Hello, good morning, and welcome. Thank you for joining us, 580-5436, 580-KIDO. That is our number. Oh, and if you prefer email, it's dave@petsofinancial.net. Now, first of all, kind of a warning. I want to get this out, and hopefully a pal of mine will call in and talk about this. He's a CPA down in Twin Falls. Probably not today. He's probably hitting a golf ball, but he will talk in more detail about this, but I really want to just quickly, we'll keep talking about this. Hopefully you talk to your CPA before this, but don't believe these people on the radio, on TV that are talking about all this free money. I know we all love free money. Never have to pay it back. There's never going to be an IRS audit. Don't worry about it. It's all good. But this whole idea of more money for employees when you've already received PPP, it's just not true. It just plain and simple is not true. And I know they're trying to sell you on the idea that don't really, you know, just get a second opinion, get out there and talk to us. Your CPA really doesn't know. We have CPAs here. And it's just another opinion. It is not another opinion. They get paid to have the other opinion. Your CPA does not. And I've never run into an honest CPA yet that thinks it's a good idea to go back and try to get this supposed free money. So leave it alone. Don't touch. Don't touch. But anyway, coming up, we'll have he or another accountant on to explain it in more detail. It's just, it's in the words of some CPAs, this is one of the greatest scams ever promoted. Pretty big statement. All right. Our number once again, 580-5436, 580-KIDO. All right. I want to talk about, first of all, volatility. Okay. You know, I mean, the market's super volatile, right? I mean, that's what everybody tells you. It's up one day, down the next. Jeez, what's going on? You know, hey, it's just crazy, isn't it? 6 weeks, the market hasn't moved 1% either direction. 6 weeks in a row. You got to go back to 2019. Okay, you can slice and dice. I know, liars. Statistics lie. Liars use statistics. I know that. I believe that. I'm a firm believer in it. All I'm using it for is to say this. The market isn't volatile. It's dull. The measurements of the volatility and all of those things. And why is this important? I mean, what's the point? The point is don't let the media, all of the inputs you grab, continue to tell you that actually the sky's orange. It's not blue. Dude, it's orange. Markets are volatile, super volatile, frighteningly scary. World's going to end. I mean, we haven't seen anything like this when it's not. It amps us up. And whether you're driving a race car, you are flying a jet, or you are thinking about your finances, is it a good idea to get amped up and really like, oh man, I am so scared. I'm so worried about things. I'm really fussed and I don't know. I'm going to read more and I'm going to think about things more. No. It's time to be cool. Right? The captain of the ship is running around with his hair on fire. That's not a captain of any ship. But that's what we do. And when we put more and more of this stuff in, is the world upside down, backwards, makes no sense. Girls aren't girls and boys aren't boys. Yeah. Yes, I'm worried about the future generations. Has nothing to do with how many iPhones Apple's going to sell this quarter. None. Nothing to do with that. Completely different. Go out and fight the good fight. Get rid of the nut jobs. They're ruining our country. They are. Doesn't change the fact you just go ahead and own Apple. Google, the S&P 500, the great corporations of the world. That's what we do. You know, it's I don't know, for whatever reason, it's come up so much lately. And we look at this, and you know, market's super volatile. And it's okay. Well, the S&P is up 9% year to date. in super volatile. We're about to fall off the fiscal cliff because we're not going to pay our bills. It's up 9. It was up this past week. As at, on Friday, the debt talks, they walked out. But Janet Yellen's over there going, ah, it's June 1st, I can't pay the bills. I mean, I'm the panicked Treasury Secretary. Oh, my. I mean, we've lost it. This is Janet Yellen, the former Fed chair, is out there panicking people. I apparently in DNC world, that the Democrats have to panic people, that is somehow politically gains for them. I have no idea how or why this is a thought process, but they do. This somehow is the game plan. Panic everybody. I don't have enough money to pay anything after June 1st. And then they walk out. And the market's up for the week. What's that about? What's all of this about, right? I mean, it's because we know what the news is. We know it's time to just sit on our hands and cash and everything else. We know all this. Why is the market going up? Just stupid people. Smart people aren't buying the market. They're buying gold. It's interesting. And I think we ought to ask this question all the time. Why? Why would the market be going up? Why? How? How can it go up with all of this going on? And how can the market be doing nothing for 6 weeks in a row while the whole world thinks what? It's volatile, super volatile. What do we do? That's media. And we really can't separate it. We think we can. We think we can sit down and watch financial pornography all day long, read about it, dig into it more online, and come walking away going, woohoo, I am feeling grand. And I'm not worried about a thing. I'm just interested. I'm just, you know, I'm just pragmatic. I'm not a pessimist. I'm not trying to find out what's wrong with the world. I'm just getting information. So I go to the Doomsday website every day to find more good information, balanced stuff. These people are just not trying to sell me gold and in their newsletters and all these things. No, that's not them. Yes, it is. And CNBC is trying to sell your eyeballs because when nothing is happening, nobody's watching. It's really true. They live for bad markets because we focus like a laser beam when markets are volatile. So they pretend to be. They pretend that the next data point is going to be important. That latest earnings report out of some food company in the Midwest is a market-moving event. When it's not. Only if you own stock in that company would it have any effect on anything, anywhere. But that's not the impression. It's not what they, it sells. Super important to get those right. You know, I kind of fall back on the whole Warren Buffett thing. I've thought so much about it recently. I've talked a lot about it, I know. I talk about the things I think about. In your life, you make, Warren Buffett said, I've made about 12 big decisions in what, a 70-year investment career? And two of them are personnel issues. I don't think he considered the other one, which is probably that he got married, stayed married, right? Same person. Charlie Munger was one, an insurance executive. And for me, I was sitting there thinking about, you know, how there's so many different things that happen in your life. In both our happiness and sustainability, financially, everything. You know, some of it is, you know, finding the right people to work with. Like you've heard her do the radio program for many years, Jennifer Stone. I mean, we just, you know, fell together, like she was just doing some administrative work for some people I worked with. Yeah, you want to work with him for a while, kind of lean into that. And then she's just so hardworking and started kind of taking over all the administrative tasks. It was an incredibly important decision for me. They're not all investment. But when you take the personnel out and you think about that with Warren Buffett, 10 investment decisions made his career?
That's
ridiculous. It's in his own words, most all of my investments are mediocre at best. That's an incredible statement. It's really an incredible statement. I know we talked about this a couple weeks ago. But we really do need to pick our heroes, pick our inputs, and think about things deeply instead of running around like our hair is on fire every day. Who are your heroes? Are they Warren Buffett or some trading monkey that you've never heard of before? Is that who you listen to? Have you ever read any of Buffett's annual reports, or did you just hear one or two sentences? Do you really think the guy that pimps equity indexed annuities honestly believes that Warren Buffett says the key is never to lose money? When Warren Buffett last week or the week before says he's only made about 10 key investment decisions in his life. What are we listening to? Oh, I'm just getting data. It's just I'm learning. Learning stuff. That's what I'm doing. Learning stuff. Really, because you can discern what is truth and what is a fabrication. What is a piece of a quote? Or what's the whole quote? Because you know so much about what is being pitched. We got to be careful. Pick our inputs. I just find it amazing. Market's going nowhere, and everybody thinks it's on fire. It's wild, crazy, volatility. Hear about it all the time. Hear about it all the time. 6 weeks in a row, it's not even moved 1%, up or down. Talk about boring as we're about to go off the fiscal cliff. That's the reality. Relax. It's not that bad. Just isn't. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. I saw Ed pop in and then pop back out. You want to give us a call, Ed? We'll put you right up. Otherwise, give us a call. Shoot us an email, dave@petsofinancial.net. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436, 580-KIDO. That is our number. Beautiful weekend. I know. It's a little smoky out there. I don't get, okay? I'm still puzzled over this, you know? Forest fires in Canada? In May? What is are the fires melting the snow? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense at all to me. I don't get it at all. But anyway, it is what it is. The forest is on fire. You'd look out, you'd think it might, when somebody says something like that, you'd think, okay, yeah, that's right, in August. Maybe that's when it should occur. Anyway, weird to me. We worry all the time. I get that. It's just natural human nature to worry. And in the next hour, I'm going to talk about what, if you will, what is it that financial advisors do? And I know Jennifer Stone, Tom Brown, they do such a good job of talking about that and, you know, the day-to-day and financial planning and what it is. And I kind of talk more on the investment side, and that's probably, you know, that's how we're set up as an office too. And then, but people think it's like, well, the financial advisor, you know, finds the right mutual fund. Financial advisor finds the right investments. No, not really. You know, it's really not true. We're kind of like shrinks, actually, right? That's kind of the most important thing. That's the greatest, highest value, right? We'll talk about that in the next hour. But it is interesting how people put on there, like, well, what's the market going to do? We don't have to know. Remember, we don't have to know. I'm going to mutilate it. But Warren Buffett has said we never have, and we never will think about and try to predict what the market's going to do over the next year. They don't spend any time on it. And they don't manage a lousy $1 billion. They manage hundreds of billions of dollars. Seriously. And they're not trying to figure out the market or what's going to happen with the debt ceiling. They're not focused on what CNBC is telling us about, you know, AMD in the middle of America, what their earnings report is. Holy cow. Batman, seriously. This is crazy. So let's see. Warren Buffett, the greatest investor of our lifetime, maybe ever, probably ever, doesn't make market prognostications. That's weird. Okay, so what do you think the market's going to do? I don't know. Let's go check it out. Let's go get some more stuff. Let's check on the web some more. Let's look at some more charts and graphs. Yeah. I wonder what JP Morgan thinks the market's going to do over the next year. How about Goldman Sachs? Let's put those two together. Because they're always the same, by the way. Did you ever notice that? That they're always within a couple percent of each other. All of Wall Street. All of them say the same thing. They sound pretty smart. They're actually not at all. Interesting, really. Greatest investor doesn't predict the market. Okay, that's interesting. So let me predict the market. Weird. It's really weird. You know, you think about that in sports or anything else. You look at a great golfer's, you know, this is how you ought to swing a golf club. You know, that's interesting. Works really well for Tiger Woods. I'm going to try something completely different. Nobody would do that. It makes no sense. All right, we're going to check out of here. Maybe we're going to talk to Russ Fulcher in the next hour, too. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. First of all, I want to say that Petzl Financial doesn't pay for the program. My wonderful sponsors do, and I really appreciate them. I've been doing this for a long, long time, and we don't sell sponsorships. People have come to us and wanted to do that, and we basically just match it up with the cost of doing radio. It's not a way to make money. And I just really appreciate these folks because they are really hardworking or good and good companies, great companies. You know, my own CPA is a sponsor of the program. It's just wonderful to know that there really are great businesses out there, and I appreciate them so very much. Hey, on the other hand, I want to mention this real quick because once in a while you run into somebody, whether they're a sponsor of this program or not. I just want to mention this. It's Concrete Craft, Bill McKernan. I appreciate you, you know, coming out and really making it right on our patio. And they just redid all the old cement. You know how crummy that can look. And redid this top coat on it. And they got some bad material. And they insisted on coming out and redoing it the next year. I just really appreciate that. And so, Bill, I just want to say, and he's not a sponsor, isn't offering anything. I just want people to know that there really are quality people out there. And Concrete Craft is at 358-9369. If you've got concrete problems, I'm telling you, these folks are sincerely good people. So thank you, Bill. You know, before we get to the phones, and I know Congressman Fulcher is going to call in as well, and I want to leave lots of time. But I want to say this and talk just a little bit about why it's important to have the right attitude about investing. And we'll talk in the future about what it is you do as a financial advisor. We've got stuff going on here today that's way more important than that. But I want you to understand something. It's not, this is so different, and my heart is truly, truly broken in so many ways for this country. It makes me very angry, and I try every day to release that. I try not to get feeling the way I feel. But it is very frustrating. This last week is just a pile on, right? The life expectancy is declining for youth in our country because of homicides, drugs, and suicide? Not because of COVID, or is it? Is it the backside of COVID that nobody wants to talk about? Where we have hormone therapies and mutilation for people that can't get a tattoo because they're too young? Does any of this make any sense? It doesn't, and it's frustrating, and it's wrong. And how does this go right? And people that hate the country, defunding the police? What? As crime spikes and murder rates go up? What? Criminals are set free and don't have to show up, and then they murder somebody, finally they go to jail? None of this makes any sense. Pumping out more money, don't work. We don't have to do that. Don't worry about the deficit and all that. It just goes on and on. I see it. I feel it. I feel it. And it breaks my heart. But it isn't a reason to not invest, is it? It's not a reason to not invest. They're different things. It's completely different things. We've got to learn to separate it in our minds. Tall Boise Bill, you're up to bat.
Oh, thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
Yeah, two things. I listened to your entire monologue the last hour, and I had a thought that it might have been like listening to a Roosevelt fireside chat. I thought you would like that.
I do like that. Reagan always did that, didn't he? And he quoted, yep, that's right, Roosevelt's chats. That's what he monitored. Yes, I do appreciate that. That's got very nice of you.
You have that ability. Ordinarily, I'd turn people off. You know, they're talking about investments and things, but you have a special ability. The second thing that I wanted to talk about just briefly, that's something I mentioned before, is that we need a leader. And I said that I think I'm talking to a leader right now. We need somebody that can speak like you can. There will not be any change. Nothing changes unless something changes.
Yeah.
And I think that a Petsky Miller ticket could go the entire distance. You have to consider it. You're special.
You're very sweet. Thank you. Thank you. Tall Boise Bill, I appreciate you very much. You're very, very kind. Thank you. Do you know
please
what?
Consider it, and I'll go away.
Okay. I have considered it. You bet I have. Thank you, sir. I have considered it as a second act in life, but I was actually visiting with a friend recently, and it was like, you know, an epiphany. You know, I'm doing what I ought to be doing right now. I have maximum impact in my world as I'm doing what I'm doing, and I think that that's a good thing. I kind of wish I was younger and thought that I could go that direction, but it's impossible. You can't do everything in life. You just can't. I appreciate it, sir. I really do, but. I think I'm enjoying visiting with folks like you and hopefully bringing some peace in our corner of the world. Let's go to Wayne. Wayne, thank you for holding. Go ahead, please.
Hello, David. I appreciate what the previous caller just said. I think he's right on.
Oh.
Listen, I'm calling regarding Berkshire Hathaway Class A shares.
Yes, sir.
In 1987, when I first... got a little serious about investing. I wanted to buy a share of Berkshire Hathaway. It sold at $21,000. My broker insisted that I not do that. He didn't think that was the thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
As I now look at the value of that, I think I'm right in saying that it's over $500,000 now.
Yes, sir. That's true.
Is that correct?
Yes. Yes, it is. It's been a pretty good ride.
Well,
it hasn't been the best performing stock, but it's been pretty good.
He hasn't made too many mistakes in the interim, has he?
No. You know, it is interesting, though. I'm going to keep reflecting on this in the coming weeks. I know it because it's just really sitting in my brain and rolling over and over and over. But how he talks about the number of big decisions he made, and they amount to, on the investment side, 10. Everything else he's made has been mediocre at best. That's his words for it. That's not my measurement of it, and including several failures. It just you just don't have to be right all the time, and that's where I think sometimes the human brain is just dead wrong. It's like, you know, you don't need very many apples in your life to make a ton of money. That you just don't.
That's right.
But we focus on trying to get it just right, getting just the lowest cost, thinking we know what the market's going to do and trying to trade around it, when the reality is maybe we just like the gaming of it, right? The gambling aspect of it, the trying to figure out things you don't know. It's going to be red. It's going to be black. And instead of just relaxing and enjoying the wealth accumulation, it's always met. But anyway, you're absolutely right. Berkshire Hathaway, you could have bought that and hung on to it. I have clients that had one share. We've not sold that share. it's been amazing to watch that go. So that's just fun.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your effort to help us understand some of these things. So thank you very much, David.
Wayne, thank you.
And I'll keep listening.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. You have a great day. Thanks, sir. All right, let's do this. Let's go ahead and get a quick break out of the way. We've got Russ Fulcher coming up next, and that way we don't try to slip in a commercial break here in the next couple minutes. We'll have a nice long segment and do a few different things. I think there's a couple things going on in D.C. right now. Maybe we can make something up on the fly. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Although you might want to wait a few minutes here, we're going to do a nice long segment with our Congressman, Russ Fulcher, here. And with that, let's go ahead and tee that up. Congressman, thank you for joining us.
Hey, Dave, my pleasure. It's great to talk to you. Look forward to doing it in person sometime.
Yeah, that would be grand. That'd be grand. I always enjoy visiting with you, and obviously, you're one of the good guys out there. You really are doing the job for all the right reasons. Not to figure out what stocks you can have your husband buy and become a multimillionaire. Anyway, that's another story.
Yeah.
What's on your mind, sir?
You know, we're going through all this debt ceiling debate right now, and the House has, I think, done a reasonable job in passing a plan. We've got a debt ceiling plan that does increase the lid, keeps critical roles of government functioning, but it comes with it a series of spending caps, which is for non-discretionary spending. It goes to 22 levels, 1% per year after that, which it's still growth, but it's a paradigm shift. And frankly, I think that we desperately need a paradigm shift in how we spend in Washington, and when you're staring at a $32 trillion debt, it makes every idea that much more important. And so collectively, Dave, as a body, we're spending more time behind closed doors in GOP conference rooms just putting ideas on the table. One of the things that popped into my head, just how to take further steps and make it fair and try to make it equitable, try to figure out ways to improve things on the deficit front, was what if we made it so that if you're over 65, you had, and you're in the workforce, or you want to get back in the workforce, stay in the workforce over 65, you had a reduced or eliminated federal tax rate. And the idea, of course, is to do a couple of things. Try to encourage more people in the workforce. There's a lot of people that are 65 plus or healthy, don't want to quit working. Why not make it, or why not consider anyway, make it more worthwhile for them? That's one objective. The other one is that productivity is still in the workforce, the ramifications of that. But I've done no study on it. We've not kicked around numbers or projections. This is your world, much more so than mine. I would just kind of like to get your take on the idea.
Well, it's an interesting idea. First of all, let me, before I shoot holes of concern in different aspects of it, to say it's an interesting idea because we obviously have too small of a workforce. But do we allow people, CEOs that are 67 years old making $20 million a year, is that necessary to keep them in the workforce? Probably not. But then again, at what level do you penalize people? You know, to say, oh, you're too rich, so you pay three times the amount of, you know, you're too productive, so we need to penalize you here. I like the cleanness of it, of the whole thought process, but I'm not sure it's actually targeting people that are meant to target. Let's say a singer-songwriter making gobs of money. They're going to stay in the workforce anyway. So that's not, is that really being more productive? I'm not sure. So I think it would require some study on that. Now I'm kind of backing into it this way to also say, does it feel like meddling with a natural thing? Are we going to continue to have policy that allows younger generations to not work? Or do we allow naturally, by taking away those things and quit meddling at a federal level, maybe with some welfare reform again, part two, going back, if you will, back to the future, back to again requiring people work, those kinds of things. I always concern myself when we are trying too hard at the federal level. We start a new plan and then we tinker with it until we create a giant bureaucracy that makes it way worse than it ever was in. You know, a good idea turns bad. That's just an initial thought, and I'm not sure that it would actually cost much of anything. You know, if people, you know, if we're talking about middle income and lower, I don't think it really costs the federal government much to say we need those folks back in the workforce. So generally, I'm going to say I like the idea to create a more of a workforce, and it's really no different than countries that have zero population growth rewarding people to have babies, right?
Yeah, there's some similarities there. And I can see that. It's, you may be aware that in the debt ceiling plan that the House passed, that's now on the negotiation table with the Senate and the White House, there are work requirements, Clinton-era work requirements for entitlements, which is what you touched on just a moment ago, and which I think is very reasonable. And there's some guidelines there if you're a single mom or if you've got health issues or handicap or whatever, then that's waived. But it's a workfare as opposed to welfare type of a proposal, which I think is more than reasonable. And the White House administration is just going nuts over that. But nevertheless, the idea is, all right, how do we take this? We've got a V8 turbocharged engine, this economic engine in this country, and we've made it, we've shut off the turbocharger and we're running on about two cylinders instead of eight comparatively to what we could do. Yeah. And taxes are part of that, how we tax. And the other part of it is how we encourage people to be part of that productivity. Mm-hmm. And frankly, the financial piece is outside my wheelhouse a little bit. I've always respected your thoughts and opinions. And so this is kind of those off the wall ideas. I just kind of want to get your take on. But point well taken on the execs. You know, that's certainly not the target audience. The intent would be more to encourage people who are on the bubble and say, you know, I may not have to do this, but hey, you know, I can increase my income on an inordinate amount, and why not? You know, that was the idea.
Yeah, no, I don't. Yeah, again, I'm not. I'd have to say the studies, but my inclination is always not to mess with Mother Nature, meaning future bureaucrats getting involved is what I see every time something new is put up. And that's just the warning. That's that to me is just, hey, we're on the warning track. Doesn't mean I can't catch the ball. I just want to, you know, think about things around me and how that might push out. I also don't want it to be another reason that we don't attack what you're talking about. And that is, we have got to quit allowing a complete disruption of social abilities in our country by really enslaving people. They don't work. They don't have to work. And why in the world would I get married and try to become more productive if the idea is by not getting married, I get more welfare? And that's my objective in life. If that's your objective in life, it's sad, and we all know that that just doesn't end well for anybody. But it still is, you know, if human beings are sad, why don't you get up and run or just sit there? Human beings are going to sit, and that's exactly what happens. And so, again, is that going to push back on that? And I appreciate what the Republicans are trying to do, because we've got to win elections to win hearts and minds and make changes. We have to. And some of these things, I know Americans support, we're told in the polls by overwhelming numbers, that some kind of welfare reform is there. But with the media running the other direction and pretending that you're pushing old people and poor people off of cliffs, I don't know how you get that message across the finish line.
Yeah. Well, collectively, and this is not just a Democrat issue, collectively, Republicans and Democrats over the last 30 years or so have contributed to the deficit that we're all dealing with now, but it's a serious one. And, you know, one other thing popped into my head when you were talking there, Dave, that I want to just tee up. We have another significant, life-changing fiscal event that's just around the corner. Think about the millions, and I do mean millions, of people who have crossed into the country over the last couple of years, 2.5 years. And yes, they're going to be in the workforce somewhere, but where are they going to be getting their health care? They're going to be getting their health care at hospital emergency rooms, because that's what's available. And hospital emergency rooms are great in that sense, but it's the most expensive healthcare delivery system out there.
Yep.
But that's where they're going to go. And I don't know that anyone is talking about that. I don't know that anyone is really trying to contemplate the ramifications of that cost. But that's only going to add more pressure to the deficit. In this case, it'd be probably through Medicare mm-hmm. channels, but all the more reason to keep the pedal to the metal in what we're attempting to do in the House right now, which is shift that paradigm when it comes to how we spend in Washington, D.C. And I'm probably rambling here just for a moment, but I wanted to just at least tee up that idea, that conversation, get your thoughts on it.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I haven't heard one single whisper anywhere about the long-term cost of millions of people, undocumented, non-tax-paying people coming across the border and what that's going to cause. And they're not, you know, they don't have to be integrated into society anymore. You know, the Irish Americans or the Czechs like I was, and they go to the coal mines in West Virginia and Pennsylvania. All that happened. And then they all got rid of their weird names, right? Or they changed it to make it more American, like Petso. Petso is a Czech name that is not actually spelled P-E-T-S-O. It's very different than that. And no foreign language is spoken in the home because they didn't want their American children to have, if you will, they wanted to speak perfect English. And so everything's changed in that. And what that really does is put a cap on people. And so it is really a difficult thing that we don't force, not force, I don't, wrong word, but really promote the full integration of people into our society. And that's how people become Americans, not, you know, under the cloak of darkness, non-taxpaying, go to the emergency room, folks. The costs are absolutely astronomical. And also, I think we're going to end up with a large crime problem because people that aren't integrated in a society don't own the society, and they end up hurting the society, in my humble opinion. So I agree with you. I think this is a very serious problem long term that nobody is talking about, which leads me to this. What are we going to do on this debt ceiling? If you could circle back to that, what are your feelings? Because that's all there is talk about right now. We got a million things here. The Durham report, the attacks on the Supreme Court by the media. All of these things are serious problems. But right now, we got to get through the debt ceiling. What's your feeling that'll happen next week?
Well, the House has done its part. It's part in the sense that it's come up with a plan, it's passed it through the House. And we're the only entity in D.C. that's done that. Senate hasn't done it. They haven't put anything on the table. White House hasn't done it. The only thing they've said is, no, we just want you to lift the lid, don't put any constraints on it, which to me and to my colleagues in the House, that's unacceptable. No, that's not what I was sent to Washington, D.C. to do. How many families do you know that we're just going to forget the balance of the checkbook and just going to keep writing those checks. Mm-hmm. No, of course not. And so we very thoughtfully, and it was not simple, Dave, but we very thoughtfully, it took a long time, came together with the plan that we did, which basically lifts that debt ceiling, $1.5 trillion, so that we keep critical functions of government going. But it also says at the same time, but for 10 years, we're going to limit the growth on the non-discretionary spending. We're going to start back at 22-year spending levels, and we're only going to allow ourselves to increase 1% per year for 10 years. And the math on that, the experts come back and say that's going to be just around $5 trillion in reduction in debt if we actually execute on that plan. But also with it, and things that are driving the White House administration and the Senate crazy is the 87,000 IRS agents, that goes away.
Yep.
The loan forgiveness, that goes away. This woke portion of the training of the military. Yes, we boost military spending because that's what we need to do right now, given the world events. But with the exception of this woke training and the expenses that go with that for sensitivity for a military fighting force. I mean, that is absolutely contrary to the inherent nature of a fighting force. Your military cannot reflect directly your citizenry because that's not their mission. Their mission is to protect, to fight, to be a destructive force, threat to the enemy.
Yeah,
that's right. And so, anyway, those are all components we've taken a hard line on. And frankly, I think we're in a pretty strong leverage position. We've done something. And, I've spent a lot of time talking to Kevin McCarthy and Jared Grant, who's doing the first front on the negotiation, saying, look, we don't have to negotiate with ourselves here. We've done something. We put it on the table. Now, okay, so Mr. Biden, what's your plan? What's your counter? Schumer, what's your counter? And so far, they're just saying, well, just let us raise the ceiling, too. And my encouragement, and I think where most of my colleagues are, say, no, we've given you a plan. If you can't say anything other than raise the debt ceiling, then, okay, we will start shutting things down. And it won't be the debt payments. We're not going to default.
Right.
We can't do that. We're not going to do that. But there will be some federal things that start shutting down. Maybe they need to. If that's what it takes to wake these guys up. But the message is going to be driven to their soul that no, we can't continue this open spending. And when we run out of money, we fire up the printing presses. No, we can't do that. Can't do that to our kids anymore. Can't do that to our grandkids anymore. And by the way, by doing that, we put ourselves at risk with economies like China, who are very expansionist in nature, that want to see us go down. And so that's a long-winded response. But frankly, next week, I think either the White House or the Senate starts to move, or we start identifying segments of the federal government to pull the plug on.
Now, let me ask you this, because it seems that every time government shuts down, Republicans lose. And that's obviously very much driven by the media, who is totally leftist. They're not journalists at all anymore. So they can count on them to carry the water that Republicans are breaking the rules and won't negotiate, won't do this. That's going to be the messaging. So do you really think that the Republicans are going to be able to stay firm and not have this be another losing government shutdown blamed on Republicans?
Well, first of all, you're absolutely right. And that's exactly where the media is trying to go right now. They want to forget the notion that we're the ones who put the plan on the table. We're the only ones who put the plan on the table. And it's the questions I get, the question Kevin gets, Garrett, everybody involved with this is, what are you guys willing to compromise on? What do you mean, what we want to compromise on? Your microphone is supposed to be on the other side of the complex of the Senate and over at the White House, because we've already put something on the table. They haven't. And so you're right. The media is going to continue to drone on that. I think that in terms of public opinion through those channels, yes, we will be painted as the villain in all of it. However, this did occur, Dave, you may recall, I think it was 2011, mm-hmm. and Republicans were blamed. But there was some reform that came out of it, at least temporarily, that fiscally was a good thing. And maybe this is just my optimistic side coming through, but, you know, the feedback I get overwhelmingly all over the state and all over the country, frankly, is things are not the same. People realize that we're in deep caca here. Mm-hmm. And when your fiscal house is not in order, then that makes you more susceptible to an outside threat as well. And I, for one, think that most people, regardless of the press, appreciate it when they hear that someone is attempting to tie some fiscal responsibility into the spending habits of Washington, D.C. I, for one, find that a very defensible position. But I am from Idaho, and I've got colleagues from California and Connecticut and New York that they don't have the same constituency I do. However, I think most rational people, once they know the facts, I think they appreciate the attempt to try to do that.
Mm-hmm. Good. All right. So I have a quick question for you. I need to take a break. Do you want to sit around for another 10 minutes? You have time?
I'm perfectly happy to, but if you've got a program to run too here, so
well, you're the star of the show now, so here you go. We'd love to talk with you. There's a lot going on in D.C., so let's go ahead and take a quick break here. We got Fox News, and on the other side, more with Russ Fulcher. We'll have about a 10-minute clip straight through. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. And we have been visiting with Congressman Russ Fulcher. We're going to wind up the program with him. Let's go ahead and go directly to him. Thanks again for holding, Congressman. I appreciate it. I know you've been working very hard in D.C. That's just got to be hard, sitting in meeting after meeting.
Well, I have to admit to you, right now, I rolled back into Idaho about midnight last night, and here's the constructive life of a congressman. I'm waiting for the dew to burn off so that I can get my weeds sprayed. And so that's the, and in the meantime, my head's running about 1,000 miles an hour. So I figure, why not turn on Petzl on the radio? So I'll listen to your head spin for a while mine's spinning and I'm waiting to spray some weeds.
Okay, good. Well, I do appreciate your time. I know you're more than deserving of some downtime, and here we are. Okay, so we've talked about immigration, the debt ceiling, and I think it's interesting, though, you bring up a point that you are the only party that has done anything, and yet everybody comes at you with, what are you willing to give up? What are you willing to negotiate on? And nobody has a plan on the other side. Again, that's the press. So I bring this back to this. Is the press ever going to change? If so, or if not, How in the world do you get the message across to a huge swath of people, number one? Number two, I don't understand, because it looks like the ratings and the complete collapse of CNN would have changed the tone to make it like they might look for an actual reporter. They might not be propagandists for the DNC. I don't see that happening. I kept thinking it would, and if not, at least the economics would change, but it doesn't. How are they getting support, and where is it coming from?
Well, first of all, they generally don't get it. The mainstream media, and I would add some other classifications, for the most part, I would say our university, academia, mm-hmm. has bought into this whole notion that socialism and a more socialistic environment economically is somehow a good thing. And so when you buy into that lie at the baseline, then you pretty much can justify how you cover things or how you approach things in academia or whatever. Now, forget history. Forget the fact that the reality is, and history has shown over and over and over again, it's a bankrupt idea. But nevertheless, they bought into it. Mm-hmm. And that ties back to a previous part of our conversation. Dave, the reason we have an open border is not because we're, quote, trying to be compassionate to people wanting to come into the country. To the contrary, this is horrific for immigrants coming in, because we're making them subject to cartels. We're opening them up to sex trafficking, human trafficking, and all the dangers and expense that comes with it by removing that control. But the purpose of that is to try to change the social structure of this country. The media's bought into it. Academia's bought into it. Certainly, the White House administration has bought into it. Progressives in the building that I work in have bought into it. And so we are in a fight for the inherent republic that our predecessors spilt blood to give us. And ultimately, it's a fight to maintain the way of life in America. But those entities simply believe that we're better off to socialize, and that's the struggle.
Yeah, yeah, it does. It just seems very, and also, it's totally immoral to use and abuse the women who are repeatedly raped, maybe even sent to, as you said, sex slaves, and the list goes on. Children abused of all these folks coming here. That's okay because it serves some kind of a greater good, that we allow that to happen, and yet we don't talk about it. The media will not talk about it. I mean, I'm sure Fox will talk about it, but the mainstream, you won't see a report on NBC of the abuse of women. And what is the end game here? Why are you supporting that, Cortez? Why are you doing that? How can you say that you're pro-woman and then support this? I just don't ever see that, and I don't understand. Is it this is power is such a big thing that no matter who pays the price and how much that is, it's okay? I mean, you can disagree that capitalism is the way for maximum freedom and bringing the poorest of people up, but you can't possibly think that it's okay to allow women to have the kind of abuse they have here, to have left Afghanistan, the train wreck it is, and allowing the women to go back to the dark ages again, and that's okay. How is that okay?
It's not okay. And even the basis of their argument, they want to change our system, but yet this is the country that people are fighting and literally putting their lives on the line to get into. And it was built by capitalism. It was built by free markets. It was built by personal liberties. But you're right. They are willing to forfeit the rights of women, the rights of children, the rights of non-citizens, and empower and fund cartels and put us at risk with illegal drugs on a level we've never seen before. We don't even know the number of true homeland security threats we've had, because we haven't monitored the people coming in, not just from Guatemala and Mexico and Honduras, but Syria, Iran, China. This is not just a, if you take a look at the map, the most direct route to the U.S. from Syria is not through the southern border. But yet we know we've got people crossing in there because they can, and there's no resistance. So it's Dave, when you and I talk in 20, 30 years, assuming we're alive in 20 or 30 years, and look back on this day, I think the most impactful policy or lack of enforcement of policy that has the longest term effect on America is probably the fact that we decided to open up our border and not enforce our laws. And millions of people unscreened came in. And that's not a shot at the people. It's a shot at the system.
Yeah.
We legally immigrate more people in a year legally than every other nation in the world combined. Think about that for a second. If you want to go to France, you want to go to Japan, good luck. They're not going to let you in. Well, there's a reason for that.
Yeah, it's a fair point. Fair point. And here we are. I started today's program. You reminded me of this, that life expectancy is declining for youth in America during the greatest scientific breakthrough period because of homicides, drugs, and suicides. That's unbelievable in a world that just says the borders are free and the cartels are free to bring their drugs in. It's just, we got problems, that's for sure. Hey, final say, what would you like to say in the last 1 minute we have?
I wish I knew a decent congressman to just go back to Washington and fix all this stuff. we are, but ultimately, all of these things are happening at a breakneck pace, Dave, that I never would have believed unless I was there, but I am. But it's our job to stand in the gap, and ultimately, I think we know that this is a battle of good versus evil. And I just encourage your listeners and yourself to keep up the fight, be vocal, share your views, be involved, be informed, be engaged, vote, run for office, support somebody that you trust who does. It's the best thing that we can do. And prayers, for those of faith, even for those, I tell people, if you have faith, pray. If you don't, pray anyway. It won't do you any harm. So,
I
didn't mean to monopolize too much of your time, but I appreciate your input. Appreciate your show.
Appreciate
you for the opportunity.
Thank you. And our prayers are with you, Congressman Fulcher. You guys stay tough. You're doing a great job back there, and we thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. All right.
Bye. We are out of time, and today was a wonderful finish on that. Let's see how the debt ceiling goes next week. I just don't think we're all going to die. Really don't. Not yet. Have a great rest of the weekend. Thanks for tuning in.